I'm not going to try to be all-inclusive about prayer. I'm not going to talk about corporate prayer or liturgical prayer. I guess what I want to do with you today is and through the week is share a little bit of my own experience and the experience of some friends of mine as we have experienced really a personal prayer life. You know, before I had to use these glasses, I could just, you know, surreptitiously glance at my notes and go on as though I remembered it all. It was really clear. But now I have to show up, you know, that I am checking the notes now and then. So what I'm going to talk about is it's more tuned into a personal understanding of the power of prayer as promised by Christ. And in some ways, then, it is kind of a personal journey. A few years ago, I think it was after I'd been at Holden, I know I did whatever writing it was in September, and it was a year after I had been in the September after I had been up here, I wrote some things down that were some thoughts that had been running around in my head for a while. I'm not a writer. I have some, you know, one of those things I always wished I could write, but somehow or another I don't quite get down to the actual hard work of doing it. But I did write down some thoughts because it seemed to me that they gave me some permission. I was raised in a family where you were really valuable when you were doing things. You know, like I can't ever remember my mother saying, "How wonderful it is you're sitting there doing nothing." You know, if I happened to sit down, there was always something else that had to be done. And I would imagine if you have Scandinavian or German or even, you know, good old Western civilization background in your lives, that you have some of that same kind of message experience in the past, that your life had value when you were doing something. There is almost that if you weren't doing something, you're going to be lazy. And if you were lazy, you were never going to be productive again. You know, once you were lazy, you were doomed. Well, I think it was while I was hiking through Holden and taking some time, which we have the opportunity to do here, just kind of walking through some of the paths. I guess going down to 10 Mile Creek is my favorite short hike. It was quiet and it was peaceful. And as I looked around at the trees and at some of the natural things that are here, I thought to myself, you know, there's nothing else that God has created that doesn't have a time when it seemingly does nothing. That didn't jibe with the, you know, get busy and do something. The devil finds work for idle hands and so forth. I was aware, and I did a little bit of reading around it, that there is, with trees, for instance, there are two ways of growing. There is a growing up and out, and there is a growing down and deep. And that, you know, if you really want to get into the tree business, there is, in most trees, just like one layer of cells that separates the upward reaching, productive part of the tree and the downward seeking, kind of receiving part of the tree. And in that sense, a tree doesn't make any excuses for growing in two directions. But certainly the emphasis in my life, and I know for many of us, has been only on the upward, the out, the giving part of it. Well, Holden gives you the opportunity to think some of these things through, and I'm a quick responder, but not necessarily a quick, I don't grab it all very quickly. It, you know, kind of seeps in a little bit at a time. And realize that that was true for us. And then I remember reading about that time, reading in John of Jesus washing his disciples' feet. And I went back a couple chapters, and here he's receiving the washing of his feet. And he's sanctifying that. How do you put that together with it's more blessed to give than to receive? And I guess the way I wanted to interpret it at that point is that there is value in receiving. And These are all little kind of little, you know, bricks that are going together, and hopefully when we get through, we'll have some kind of a structure here.
There's another place, excuse me, where he says that it is in giving that you receive, which lets you know a little more clearly, I think, that there is value in receiving.
In the receiving, right. And certainly not to say that there's not value in giving, because there is, but there's a sense in which when you have received, because we have been loved, we can love. You know, children who have not been loved cannot love. Animals who have not been well treated and cared for cannot give forth. You know, if you don't give a tree the nutrients it needs, it's going to produce pretty spare fruit. But there is a time in the life of a tree, and I guess I want to make this a little analogous here, that, like, you look at an apple tree, in the middle of January, that apple tree looks like it's dead. It looks like it's doing absolutely nothing. It's kind of at a crossing point. And then before it goes on to produce blossoms or leaves or fruit, it takes time to receive. And it, you know, spring rains come and that tree fills its roots with the water and the nutrients that are there in the soil. When it comes time to produce the flowers and the leaves and the fruit, it's not an effort. You know, the Lord loves a cheerful giver, to quote another one. But it's not an effort. The tree isn't forced to give. It does because it has so much it can't help but give. And I think there's a sense in which that's true for us too. As we receive and make it part of ourselves, as we receive the word, as we receive, you know, certainly as we receive up here, because we get, you know, I guess I'll talk to myself, but for myself, I receive so much in this community. I go back, you know, just overflowing and brimming. And as I see people off on the bus, I know that they have that sense too, that when they go back, they've got so much that they want to give to their home congregations or people at home, share ideas, do things. And there's a sense in having received, allowing themselves to receive, that they are free to overflowing. The receiving time often appears to be a time of, as I said, of doing nothing, of silence, of quietness, non-production. And yet we don't know what's going on inside those people who are receiving, and other people don't know what's going on inside of us. When we are in a point where we are meditating, receiving, praying, conversing with God and listening for responses. The story, you know, in terms of industry, there's a story about Henry Ford, who hired an efficiency expert to look at his factory and see if he was doing it as well as it could be done. And the efficiency expert did this thorough study and said, you know, everybody seems to be producing at maximum capacity, except for that one fellow down in that little room at the end of the hall. He sits in there with his feet up doing nothing all day. You know, it's just wasting your time and your money. And Ford was said, well, every once in a while, he comes up, he has an idea that is worth 2 years' worth of everybody else's work. That the man who was sitting in there, apparently doing nothing, was productive in a different kind of way, and not necessarily on a schedule. So in that sense, I'm just affirming some quiet time. Quiet time for you, quiet time for me, quiet time for all of us. And that's pretty difficult. You know, Holden gives us some opportunities. As women, we don't have to fix the dinner or do the shopping. Husbands don't have to do the laundry. Depends how you work it in your house. The kids don't have to do the laundry in our house. Here we're trading it off. Today, this week was mine, next week is Dale's, and third week is Laurel's week to do the laundry while we're here. But at home we have, you know, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning, straight on through, we're usually highly programmed. And there are times, I know for me, when it's really easy to take some time for some meditation, some prayer, some reading, read the Bible, and give some opportunity for that to kind of integrate and get into my system. And at other times it's really hard. I keep thinking, oh, I ought to be doing this, I ought to be doing that, I've got to have this done. And the most effective way I've had of dealing with that is to make an appointment. I deal with appointments all the time. I sell real estate. You know, I found with clients, the only thing they understand is if I've got another appointment. It might be my daughter's birthday party, but it's an appointment. They don't really understand if I say I have to go to a birthday party. But if I have another appointment, well, then they're willing to go along with that. So I take some time, which is an appointment with God, just to be, to have some time to clarify my own thoughts, to share that, and to be quiet. Sometimes I take some time to read the Bible, and just be quiet with it. And it's always a gift when suddenly, it's not always, but whenever it happens, it is a gift that somehow I have a new understanding, a new appreciation of what I've read that day. I was trying to think, in our normal life, there really isn't the kind of activity for most of us, especially some women have given up washing dishes by hand. That used to be a good time when, you know, your hands were busy, but your mind could be free to think and to meditate, so forth. Yeah, now you stuff it in the dishwasher and put them away. I guess men, when they used to do carpentry by hand, had some time to think while they were sawing. And woe be to their fingers if they're using their power saw and they're not really concentrating on what they're doing now. But a lot of the times that heretofore were, our bodies were spent in relatively functional kinds of things, what our minds were free to think about something else. We don't have a lot of that now. You can't drive down a superhighway 70 or 60, 55 miles an hour and think about something else, even though your body is actually involved in only a certain number of functions. You better keep your mind on the road. There is one activity I thought about as I was, you can fish. And if you have the kind of fishing luck that I do, it's non-productive. But there is some time to think. And so I do cherish, for people who really do like to fish, that's a good time. And it can be, what are they doing? It doesn't really make any difference if they come home with fish. They can be involved in the process and let their mind concentrate on something else. A few years ago, after I had written this little blurb only for myself, but I shared with you a little bit about the trees and about the two kinds of productive time. That time of receiving is a productive time. Without it, we have no fuel to go on. The person who keeps pushing and pushing to give and give and has not allowed themselves to receive doesn't have anything to give. They just give dregs. And you've all seen, I'm sure, some people who've been in that position, or maybe you have yourself. You know, you want to give, but you really have so little left, and yet you have not given yourself permission to stop and do some receiving. Well, shortly after that, I was involved in a program at our church called Life Building Fellowship, and we were talking about prayer one night. And one of the women in the group said, I pray about all kinds of things. If I lose my keys, I pray about that. Well, I wasn't sure about that. And I said, you know, I really have a hard time conceiving of God saying, okay, zap, now Vani shall find her keys. Room was kind of quiet for a while. I'm a minister's wife, you know. I'm not supposed to question that sort of stuff. But somebody said, well, did it ever occur to you, and this was one of the lay people in the group, said, did it ever occur to you that by even clarifying that for yourself, that God has the power to give you what you already know? I thought about that for a while. Because I know out of my studies in psychology that we know so much more than we think we know. That there are resources and there, you know, everything we have ever seen or heard or done or anything, it's all there. And yet we can't pull it out. We can't always come forth with it. And well, I thought about that for a little while.
Yeah.
And somehow or another, the image to me, I was thinking about the, you know, the phrase, ask and it shall be given to you, seek and you shall find, knock and the door will be open. I thought, hey, do I really believe that? Or is that something I, you know, go through quickly and read it and say, uh-huh, but haven't really incorporated into myself? And I had a picture in my mind, and this was one of those kind of flashes while I was meditating one day. Just the flash of what looked like a small table with a few crumbs on it, pushed up against a wall. And then there was a big window there. And then the picture, the window opened up, and there was a huge, long banquet table, loaded. And for me, again, this is one of the interpretations I took of that, was that in my own prayer life, I had cheated myself. God had promised me a banquet table, and I was being satisfied with the crumbs. My prayer life was not a real kind of communication. I wasn't even honest with myself. I was saying those nice things that I thought a good Christian ought to say, instead of really being honest in terms of my own anger, my own feelings of inadequacy, what I really wanted. I could only, somehow or another, I could only ask for what I wanted if I could in some way justify it. And so therefore denied that this was what I wanted. I think tomorrow I want to talk a little bit about, you know, being honest, and being honest with ourselves, and then being honest with God. Because, you know, God already knows, and I might just as well be honest with him because he's sitting there saying, you know, hey, that's not all there is to it. Or she, or God is perceiving me as being less than clear with myself, less than honest with myself. And so as I looked at this picture of this huge banquet, I thought, what could happen, what would happen if I believed? If I really prayed believing. And if you go through the New Testament, you see one verse after another that says, you know, pray believing. In Mark it says, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. And I thought, and I didn't really believe that. Part of me did, part of me didn't. We know that we've already been granted what we asked of him. That's in 1 John. And so it has been a continuing journey, a continuing experience for me to try to be honest in my prayer life as I pray and try to make it a conversation. To pray, sharing with God what I'm learning about myself, and then take the time and the quietness to listen. And sometimes I just listen in complete quietness. And sometimes some thoughts come to my head that I hadn't taken the time to recognize before, and that have had some real significance for me. And so I've learned, and I, you know, I'm offering this as a personal experience because this is not the last word, but it has been a real growing experience for me to pray believing, and then to take stock the next week. Say, hey, I didn't realize, but my prayers have been answered. Maybe not in the way that I had, you know, I would have programmed it, but in ways that I must admit have been real answers to my prayers. In the process, for me, I have I have, for the most part, I won't say all the time, because sometimes, you know, I feel like I'm outside of the system and that God is far away and I'm questioning. So I deal with it, I believe, helped on my unbelief. But for the most part, it has been a real experience in knowing a real certainty about God's presence in my life. And I share this because, you know, I can't claim that that'll be the same for you. But I share it because I hope maybe if you haven't looked at some things this way, or if perhaps even if you have, to be able to share some of that with us, and that you might have your own validating kind of experience of God's presence in your life, Christ being there, and the answers to your prayers. As I said, prayer is talking to God, and it's also listening for his answer. And I really appreciated last night's worship service, which had some time for some quiet. There was some time for some meditation after the sermon. And even in our structured liturgical service, it says so in the LBW, but most of us get nervous unless we're moving on, unless there's some sound, unless there's some movement. And I guess if there would be anything I'd want to share with you is the... that sometimes no movement is the best thing that can happen. As we go on this week, I'll talk a little bit more about some kinds of practice in some Christian meditation, and some of the things we have learned from the East, and some of the things we've reclaimed from early church history about meditation. And I think it's, I guess I find it really an exciting part of my life. And I'm open to any questions. If you have any questions, I can't answer all of them for you. You're the only one that can answer them for you. But I'll be glad to share with you whatever I have.
Just an observation, John Powell, who is a Jesuit scholar, maybe you've read some of his stuff, but he told us, we were standing at a dinner line together once, and he mentioned to a good friend of mine and I, he said, well, he said, why don't you pray questions? And then he said, if you don't think you're getting a response to your questions, try a different question. Says, because the one you're asking isn't doing any business with you. Maybe that's why you're not getting anything. I thought that was an interesting approach. You know, I guess I've yet to try it at any consistent pattern.
The question I would ask you to avoid would be why.
Well,
you know, but in terms of.
But I think even that question, you know, according to Powell's formula there, that, you know, if you didn't get anything to that one, then perhaps you could be prodded to move on. Yeah. I have this good friend of mine also who, you know, he's really my best friend in the ministry, and I think everybody ought to have somebody they can share with like him. But we confront one another on some of our shortcomings, I think, and also support one another in ministry. But he has a sign in his office that says, pray, and then he's got a little slash down in one corner that says, listen.
Yeah.
You know, one day I asked him, I said, why isn't the word listen at least as large as the word pray? You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, those are just a couple observations.
What was it, we're given one mouth and two ears? Yeah, so that means we should listen twice as long as we speak?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I think maybe one of the great shortcomings of our day is that we really think we're too busy to have time to pray and to have meditative reflection even.
One of the things that was interesting for me as I've been in sales is if you go to a lot of sales training courses, that at some point with these top sales trainers, at some point in it, they will start talking about a power that's, they'll talk about whatever the mind can conceive and you can believe, you know, you can achieve. They'll start talking about that kind of power, which is an awful lot of what we've been talking about in the Christian faith, about, you know, in terms of prayer. And we're denying that. And here are these people who are out to make money. They'll tell you that, hey, this is there. It's real. And we'll program it into your course.
Yeah. I guess I'm not real comfortable with that whatever you can conceive and believe you can achieve notion. You know, reminds me of the story of a gal who told her 3-year-old daughter that she could be anything she wanted to be, and asked her a few days later what she wanted to be, and she said she'd like to be a horse.
There are some limits, right. But we put an awful lot of limits on ourselves.
Oh yeah, that, to be that, sure. Yeah. And maybe that's what that's saying. I don't know. You know,
I'm not too ready to have my 3-year-old daughter turn into a horse, there are a lot of things that that are possible that we really have denied ourselves.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, when you're talking about Paul, it reminded me of something else, and I'm trying to move back to that thought in terms of asking questions. Oh, and one of the things that I have found really effective, I'm a pretty visual kind of person. That illustration of the banquet and the crumbs, as I said, just came to me in a picture. I will often visualize my prayers rather than try to put them in careful words, making sure I get all my I's dotted and all my T's crossed. And we have one son. We've got 4 kids, 3 boys and a girl, and one son that I spend a tremendous amount of energy in prayer. You know, we prayed him out of high school. We've got one boy who, well, the other 3 kids have been easy to talk with, easy to work with, reasonable kids sort of thing. I'm putting that in quotes because maybe this other one is the most reasonable of all and I'm just out of sync. But he had none of his friends finished high school. You know, the dropout rate was significant in his class. He's now 21. And there was no way, and in many ways there is still no way, we can deal with them directly. My husband's, you know, psychiatric social worker, years and years of counseling. I practically got my master's in counseling. The direct approach, even the indirect approach, dropping little things, that doesn't seem to help. The only way that we, that seemed to have any effect was to pray. And my prayer was not that Peter finish high school. My prayer was really that God protect him and guide him. And I just had an image of him in my mind and turned it over to God in my mind. Because there's no way that I could say what I program, what I say is the right thing, is going to be the right thing for that boy. But I do believe that I can turn that over to God. And that's, you know, I turn it over and the next day I snatch it back and want to do it myself. You know, and then I turn it over and let's stay for 2 days and the next day, you know, I'm not even aware and I have snatched back that responsibility and that worry and so forth. He's a neat kid, but yeah, he still is not one of our more reasonable kids. He's 21, he's just finished 3 years at PLU and he's going on to OSU to get his degree in engineering. But I know that it may not have done anything for Peter, but God worked a lot in my life in terms of what was happening in that prayer.
Isn't it John Drescher that wrote this little book on how he'd change or what he'd do differently if he had his kids to raise over again? Mm-hmm. One of the chapters says that he'd pray for his kids less, you know, and then he goes on to explain what that means. But he said, you know, that when his kids were growing up, that he would pray, you know, dear God, make Billy such and such, you know, and what he was really asking is that the kid be changed to fit how he wanted the kid to be rather than, what he had been created to be.
Yeah, I think those of us who are parents know that that's the hardest part of being a parent, is to allow your child to be who that person, you know, let that person emerge, and trust that God's going to help that person to emerge and that you don't have to bind it and, you know, like Chinese women's feet in the olden days, when you bind it to make them the right size. But I have found that for me, I would get, and I'm sure it's out of my own fears, you know, old fears, that if I didn't cross every T and dot every I and I prayed for something, I was afraid God might give me exactly what I'd asked for, but it wasn't really what I wanted.
I hope you haven't, because it's really a lack of faith. You know, it's really saying God does not want the best for me. And my head believes that, but there's a part of me down inside that I'm afraid that it might not be. You know, there's some kind of a twist. And so I have found that the best way for me to get away from that fear was to visualize what it is. The caring, just to take care of people. That he may grow up and live and love and care and be his own person, according to God's will, and not according to my will.
I know
And not enough, you know, a lot of us have some opportunities in relatively inconsequential ways, but in terms of, you know, being imprisoned and his whole life, it's great.
Impressed enough with me, he called about three or four other people in the bank. He wanted me
to be in dance in some way. Well, it didn't work out, and you know, none of the other positions were such that I could fill those. One said, you know, you're too heavyweight for this position, and so forth. But with a real sense of real affirmation out of that. But the thing that I really enjoyed was that image of Christ laughing. Not deriding me, not saying, hey, how come you didn't pray about this earlier? Bawling me out and so forth, but it was a real sense of, you know, fine, I'm still there. And a real sense of being loved. And I'm not saying, you know, you get these thunderbolts out of blue, or God speaks to you, and you know, just like you did the Moses on the mountain or something like that. But I do believe if you open yourself to God, the things, when you take the time, the things are clear. That He will let you know things that you already know. I think that's one of the advantages, one of the real pluses about prayer and meditation that we often deny ourselves.
And too, and then oftentimes it's up to us to carry the ball. And we get what seems like a message or a clarification. And then if we don't take that and go on with it, I know when we first moved out here, I've had the usual piano lessons when I was growing up, and two teachers completely gave up on me and told my parents to save the money. And we moved into a church in North Bend, and they were looking for an organist. And I was on the committee to look for an organist. And I got this bolt from the blue or whatever clarification that I was going to be the organist. And that was the most difficult thing for me to call with my vast musical knowledge and say I would be the organist. But that was 21 years ago. And God gave me the strength and the knowledge that I needed. That it takes, you know, you must take the jump. And sometimes it's not easy. But I remember many times sitting at that organ and thinking, what are all those dots on that page? You know, what does it mean? But then if I let God work through me and to make music, it can be beautiful music. And then when I come to the point in some four and I have a dream group.
They're all dots again, aren't they?
They're all dots. Yeah. And over a period of time, I have learned more. That I still need to remember that the gift came to God.
Yeah, and I think it's important, really important, and part of it is appreciating the answer to prayer. And it's thanksgiving. To really lift up and celebrate. And if you start doing it, you'll be surprised. I think for a lot of us, you say, well, you know, I prayed and now. Or you talk to friends who say, I prayed, and you know, and the answer was no, or I was asking the wrong question, or something like that. But I think if you are aware of that for which you pray for, and then, you know, kind of, just as you, at the end of the month, you kind of, you know, I paid bills this morning, but as you kind of tally up what's happened over the month, or over the week, or over the day, you'd be surprised how many things that, you have been granted and given that you have asked for. Maybe in a different angle, from a different angle, from a different perspective. But as you look at it, you know, it all works together for God's good, for the good of all of us. It's there and to give thanks.